So if you point a camera at a rhino running down a grassy hill, what do you get?
Well, you get a picture of a rhino running down a hill.
Right, exactly. You get the picture. And for, I mean, basically the entirety of human history, that's been our relationship with visual information, you know?
Oh, absolutely. It's a deeply ingrained evolutionary survival skill. We are just incredibly good at spatial reasoning.
Yeah, like what you see is what is actually there.
Right. If our ancestors saw a steep incline in front of them, they knew it was a physical hill they had to climb. We are hardwired to look for landscapes in everything we look at.
But then you step into the world of abstract data, and specifically graphing physical motion on a two-dimensional piece of paper.
Which is where things get tricky.
It really does. Suddenly, that literal camera we all have in our heads completely breaks down because you look at a line that that curves up and over like a hill, and your brain just screams, "That is a hill!"
Yes. But in the world of mathematics, a picture of a hill is very, very often a trap.
A huge trap. And today's deep dive is all about decoding that exact trap. We're looking at a stack of sources today that, well, on the surface, they're just practice questions for the final exam. So we're looking at questions 28 through 32 from this packet, which deal entirely with speed time graphs and distance time graphs. But before we even get into like students rushing to class or wild animals charging across the savannah, we have to lay down the absolute unbreakable law of this two-dimensional space.
And it all comes down to the horizontal axis.
Time.
Time, exactly.
Yeah.
And time relentlessly marches forward from left to right,
Left to right, always.
always. It
Okay.
never stops, it never pauses, and it certainly never goes backward.
So every millimeter you move to the right on that piece of paper is a second or a minute or an hour just slipping away into history.
Beautifully put. Whatever happens on the vertical axis, so whether you're measuring your distance from a location, the speed you're running, the temperature outside, or I don't know, the value of a stock portfolio,
Right.
it's simply a reaction to that passage of time. Time does not care what you are doing. The vertical axis is just recording your status at each passing millisecond.
Exactly. Let's test that out with a scenario from the exam packet. It asks you to look at a set of graphs and choose the one that represents a very relatable morning routine. You are walking to
I've
class.
all been there.
We really have. So I want you to visualize this with me. The vertical axis on these graphs specifically represents your distance from your classroom.
And that word from is doing a lot of heavy lifting there.
Right, because think about where you are when the clock starts.
Exactly. At time zero, which is the far left edge of the graph, you're waking up in your dorm or your apartment. You are not at the classroom. You're at your maximum distance away from it.
So my starting dot on this graph isn't down at the bottom corner at zero. It's like hovering way up high on the vertical axis because I have a long way to go.
Right. And as you leave your dorm and start walking at a steady, consistent pace, your distance from the classroom steadily decreases.
Because I'm getting closer.
Yes. And geometrically, a constant speed translates to a straight, slanted line on a distance-time graph. Because the distance is dropping, that slanted line must point downward from left to right.
Okay, I'm picturing a playground slide, just a perfectly straight, downward angled line. And looking at the options in the test packet, both choice A and choice D start off with this exact playground slide shape.
They do. They both capture that initial steady walk perfectly.
But then the scenario throws a wrench into the morning. The clock chimes, you realize you're late, and you speed up.
Right. Here's where we have to translate a physical biological change. So your sudden burst of energy into a geometric change on paper.
Right.
On a distance-time graph, the slope of the line, the actual steepness itself, represents your speed.
Okay, and this is where my brain immediately tries to sabotage me because I'm looking at choice A. It shows that nice, steady downward slide, but the moment the clock chimes, the line hits a sharp point and aggressively angles upward. And if I'm the one walking to class and I realize I'm late, my instinct is a panic response. My heart rate spikes, my breathing gets heavier, I start pumping my arms. Everything about my physical reality feels like an upward action.
The adrenaline's going up.
Exactly. So naturally, I want the line on the graph to shoot up to match my effort.
And that instinct is exactly why this problem is engineered the way it is.
Yeah.
You're feeling the physical exertion and translating it into verticality on the page. But look back at the label on the vertical axis.
Distance from the classroom.
Yes, it measures distance from the classroom. So if the line suddenly shoots upward, the distance from your destination is
increasing.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So choice A means the clock chimed, I totally panicked, turned around on my heels, and sprinted in the completely opposite direction.
You practically bolted back to your dorm.
I just gave up on going to class.
Yeah, choice A indicates a high-speed sprint away from class.
Yeah.
The math, it doesn't care about your heart rate. It only cares about your location. Since the scenario explicitly states you speed up toward your destination, you must be getting closer. The distance must continue to drop.
So the line has to keep going down, but it can't just remain that original straight playground slide because my speed changed. I'm walking faster now.
Exactly. And this brings us to the correct answer, which is choice D. It starts with the steady downward slant. But when you start running, you are chewing up larger and larger chunks of distance every single second.
Okay.
So for every tick of time moving to the right, the line has to plunge deeper and deeper down the vertical axis.
It bends. It creates a curve that gets steeper and steeper, pointing toward the bottom of the graph.
Yes. The mathematical term for that shape is concave down. It curves downward increasingly fast until it finally crashes into the horizontal axis.
And crashing into the horizontal axis means my vertical value has hit zero. My distance from the classroom is zero. I am sitting at my desk.
You made it.
I made it.
The beauty of choice D is that it tells a complete, physically accurate narrative of human urgency, all through just the bending of a single geometric line.
That's wild. Okay, so and that brings us to questions 30 and 31. Both of these questions feature the exact same physical event. So we're out on the savannah observing a rhino. Mm. The rhino is lumbering along at a steady pace, and then suddenly, without warning, it breaks into a full-blown run.
And remember, the physical reality is identical for both questions. If you were standing there with a camera, you would film the exact same footage.
Right.
But the graphs representing that footage are going to look entirely different. This forces you to confront the most critical habit any data consumer can develop. You have to read the axis labels before you look at the shape of the line.
Okay, let's tackle question 30 first. The vertical axis here is labeled speed.
Okay, so think about what a steady pace means when you are strictly measuring speed.
Well, if I'm on the highway with the cruise control set to 60 miles per hour, my speedometer needle is frozen. The speed is just a constant number.
Exactly. So as time marches relentlessly forward on the horizontal axis, the vertical value, the speed, stays locked at that one specific number. On paper, that visualizes as a perfectly flat horizontal line just floating above the bottom axis.
Just a straight flat horizon. But then the rhino runs.
The animal accelerates. Its speed increases rapidly, so the vertical value must suddenly go up. That flat hovering line abruptly shoots upward at a sharp angle.
Which perfectly matches choice C for question 30. Flat line, then a steep angled line going up. Honestly, it looks exactly like a stock market chart when a company suddenly announces a breakthrough product. Like nothing is happening and then boom, the value spikes.
Yes, it's the exact same mathematical principle. A sudden increase in the rate of a measured value.
Okay, that feels pretty intuitive. But then you flip to question 31. The scenario is still the rhino. It's still walking steadily and then running. But the vertical axis is no longer speed.
Right.
It is now labeled distance, specifically distance from the rhino's original starting position.
And this is where our evolutionary baggage really messes with us.
I will happily admit, looking at the options for Q31, choice D is screaming my name.
Is it the hill?
It's the hill. Choice D shows a line going up at a nice steady angle, and then it rounds over the top and curves downward. It literally looks exactly like the slope of a grassy hill. It looks like a physical path the rhino is running down.
It is the most common misconception in all of graphing. We desperately want the graph to be a landscape painting. We see a hill, we assume the rhino ran over a hill. But a graph is not a map of a physical space.
Right.
It is a measurement of data over time. We have to dismantle that hill.
How do we mentally break that down? Because the visual pull of the hill is incredibly strong.
You do it by returning to the mechanics of the axis. So the vertical axis is distance from the starting point. When the rhino is just walking steadily away from where it started, the distance is increasing at a constant rate.
Just like your steady walk to class, but in reverse. You're building distance, so the graph is a straight, slanted line going up.
Right, a steady upward slope. Then the rhino breaks into a run. Its speed increases. Now recall what we established during the walking to class problem. On a distance time graph, what does the slope of the line represent?
The slope represents the speed. The steeper the line, the faster you're moving.
Exactly. So if the rhino's speed is increasing, the slope of our line must get steeper.
Which completely destroys the hill in choice D. because the hill curves back downward. If the line curves down, it means the vertical value, the distance from the start, is suddenly decreasing.
The rhino would have had to screech to a halt, turn 180 degrees, and sprint back toward where it came from.
But the rhino is just running faster away from us, so the line must continue upward, but it has to, like, chew up more distance in less time.
It must bend upward. It creates an increasingly steep curve pointing toward the top right corner of the page. That points us directly to choice A, an upward bending curve. It isn't a picture of a hill, it's a visualization of pure, raw acceleration.
It really forces you to actively fight your own brain's desire to see a landscape and instead read the grammar of the geometry.
Absolutely. So we've looked at linear trips with an endpoint, and we've looked at sudden, unpredictable bursts of animal speed. But there's a third type of motion in this packet.
Oh, right.
Motion that is constrained and repeating. Let's look at question 32. We're leaving the savannah entirely and heading to a carnival. We are boarding a Ferris wheel.
So the question asks us to identify the graph that represents our distance from the ground as time passes while riding the Ferris wheel.
Let's map the physical experience of the ride to the axis.
Yeah.
You board the car down at the bottom platform. Your distance from the ground is at its absolute minimum. The operator starts the ride. Time begins its forward march.
Left to right.
Left to right. The wheel turns and you're lifted up, climbing toward the highest point of the structure.
So my vertical value, my distance from the earth, rises up to a maximum peak.
Yes. The wheel continues its rotation, carrying you over the top, and you begin your descent back down toward the platform. The vertical value drops smoothly back to that initial minimum.
But I don't get off. The ride isn't over. The wheel keeps turning, so I immediately start going back up again.
And this is where the physical constraints of the machine dictate the math. The steel spokes of a Ferris wheel, they don't stretch and they don't shrink. The radius is perfectly fixed.
Okay.
Because of that, every single time you hit the apex of the ride, your maximum distance from the ground is identical to the last time you were up there.
Again.
And every time you sweep past the bottom, the minimum distance is identical.
So on our graph, with time constantly moving to the right, this motion creates a beautifully smooth repeating wave. Up to a set height, down to a set height, up again.
That corresponds to choice B. A consistent undulating wave that perfectly captures the rhythm of the ride.
I hear the logic for choice B. I really do. But I'm staring at this packet and I have to confess something. Choice C is sitting right next to it. And the temptation to pick choice C is totally overwhelming.
The infamous loopy graph.
Yes. Choice C isn't a wave. It's a series of literal loops drawn horizontally across the graph, like a coiled spring stretching out. It visually looks like a wheel rolling forward across the page. It matches the physical circular shape of the ride I'm sitting on.
It is the rhino's hill all over again, but honestly, exponentially more deceptive because it actually incorporates the circular nature of the Ferris wheel.
Exactly.
This is the perfect moment to pull out a fundamental mathematical weapon that completely destroys the loopy graph. It's called the vertical line test.
The vertical line test. Okay, I want to try to conceptualize this. If our horizontal axis is time moving left to right, well, drawing a straight line straight down through the graph would be like hitting the pause button on a movie, right? I'm freezing a single specific millisecond in time.
That is the perfect way to think about it. You're isolating one exact moment, say exactly 45 seconds into your ride. Now, in the real physical world, at 45 seconds, you can only exist in one physical location. You can only be at one specific distance from the ground.
That's just the law. I cannot be at the top of the Ferris wheel and the bottom of the Ferris wheel at the same time.
Therefore, for any graph to represent a valid mathematical function, a reality that can actually exist, that frozen vertical line of time can only intersect the drawn graph at one single point.
Because that one point represents my one true location at that exact moment. Okay, so if I look at choice B, our undulating wave graph, and I draw a vertical line straight down through it, it only ever clips the wave once. No matter where I draw the line, there's only one intersection.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. Now perform that exact same test on choice C, the loopy graph. Take your imaginary pencil and draw a vertical line straight down through the center of one of those loops.
Okay, my pencil line hits the top curve of the loop, then it passes through the empty space in the middle, and then, oh wow, it hits the bottom curve of the loop. It intersects the graph at two distinct points on the exact same vertical timeline.
Think about the real-world implications of what that intersection means.
Because that vertical line represents a single frozen millisecond, Hitting 2 points on the vertical axis means I am existing at two entirely different distances from the ground simultaneously.
According to choice C, you are hovering 10 feet in the air and 50 feet in the air at the exact same moment.
Unless they have secretly engineered a Ferris wheel car that doubles as a quantum time machine. Choice C is physically impossible. I simply cannot be in two places at once.
Accidental time travel is the quickest way to know you have failed the vertical line test. The loopy graph is a wonderful illustration of a slinky, but as a measurement of distance over time, it's pure science fiction. Your data is claiming an impossibility.
So, we have survived the frantic walk to class, we didn't fall for the rhino's optical illusion, and we successfully avoided ripping apart the space-time continuum at the carnival. But what does this mean for you listening right now when you aren't staring down a college math final?
The big summary here is that you have to consciously arm yourself with the right analytical tools before you observe visual data. First, you absolutely must check your vertical axis before making assumptions.
I always check the labels.
Always. As we saw with the rhino, the exact same reality can look like a flat horizon line or a steep, aggressive curve, depending entirely on whether you're measuring speed or distance against time.
You cannot know what the shape means until you read the label. Second, recognize that a graph is a measurement of data, not a physical map. A curving line is an acceleration, not a grassy hill.
And third, use the vertical line test as your ultimate reality check. If time is moving forward, you cannot have two answers for the exact same moment.
We want to leave you with a final thought to ponder as you go about your day. Now that you know how easily the human mind is manipulated by a graph that happens to look like a physical object, like that rhino's hill or the loopy Ferris wheel, pay attention to the graphs that cross your path. Take a hard look at them. Are you actually reading the relationships in the data? Because once you see the traps, the world of data looks entirely different.